Yes.
You're talking about step four, and you're talking about acknowledging the negative shadow side as well as the positive side. And I was just trying to, I'm wondering how, this is step four in the book, it's not clear how we're supposed to bring out that good side.
No, you're right. But it's discussing what are those things that are blocking us. And I'm saying when we're working from, and that can be the compulsive side, when we're working from the compulsive side to go to the redeemed side, I have to address that particular issue. If it's a resentment problem, it was brought to me, a very astute remark was brought in the session. I was talking to one of the gentlemen, and like he said, if it's a resentment problem and I'm a good carpenter, does it mean that I just go off and do some good carpentry work when I have a resentment against George? I say, no, you got to go play golf with George. Right? St. Francis of Assisi could not stand the leper till he kissed the leper, then he could see the beauty in the leper. All right? So when we become aware of what I call shadow side, or, you know, which is, say, character defects, then to stretch and get that redeemed so that I'm able to accept myself with those, because that's exactly where God loves me. That's exactly where God accepts me. Even though, as I said, what we kill is goodness. And we continue to kill goodness in ourselves. Right? And what we have to do is become aware of that and start working on not just redeeming it, but exercising it. Explain a bit. Well, again, everybody is an individual. I don't want to put down like that there's only one single way to do it. And if you don't do it the way Father Quinn says to do it, there's no hope that you're ever going to stay sober. The alcoholic can be pretty rigid and perfectionistic. And I certainly don't want to put that in a bind and people say, well, I don't know how to start. Well, just start writing and take the big book and just start writing on some of those things. And it'll come out. Because, you know, the other, it's very important when you read things that you've written about yourself in total honesty. And you're not doing it for publication now, right? Remember, you're not just dressing it up to look good. You know? But if that's a way that your personality works and, say, gathering material, the good and the bad, some people will only want to look at the good stuff. You know, some people can't look at the bad stuff at all. They would be what we call seven, different personalities. It's the same thing for prayer, right? Because there's many, many, many different ways of praying. Some of them are very, very life-giving for some types of personalities and temperaments, and others are not, right? So I don't want to say, unless you do it exactly the way that I was bringing out in that book is, oh God, I found that in Minnesota, I'm sure in the 70s, but it's just something that gets something going. And then we're actually doing the work. And again, you're going to always hear me say that, the work. Another question was brought up by a young lady, which is true, and is the fact that there can be people from the different denominations, even other than Christianity, you know. And what I am saying is because I am a Roman Catholic priest, and I have a history, and I have a background, and I am giving you some of that. But that does not mean that if other people don't do it that way, that nothing's going to click for them. But what I am saying is that we all have to stand up and say, what are those things which we believe in that are going to, you know, turn our crank, motivate us, bring us on? It doesn't mean right or wrong. You're very, I hope I've never even used the words once yet, right or wrong. But it's what is responsible and what is not responsible. There's no such thing as really as right or wrong when we're dealing with people. And everybody has gifts. And certainly it can be Jewish, for sure. I have lots of Jewish friends, worked a lot with them. Even in the penitentiary systems, you certainly had Mohammeds, I had Muslims, and they, some of them, are very, very beautiful people, and their commitment to what they believe in is Buddhist, the same, You know? Admirable. Admirable. But it can't be translated into Christian context. You know, you got to realize that this book comes out of, oh, I forget, Oxford Group, and that's Akron, Ohio, 19, well, before the 30s, so they were rigid. Rigid, okay. But they're a lot more rigid than the way it's come in now. They've had to change some words. Yes? To be able to take the time
to
see gifts. Yeah, because people can have all kinds of different facades on the outside. Joy, of course, enthusiasm, yeah. But so you start picking their brain, right? There's nothing wrong with it. You're being perfectly honest, you know, and I don't think it's a static state that we're, once we get it, we're forever going to be joyous. Imagine if you had to live with them. That's where they're putting their best foot forward when they're coming to the meeting. Right? It's not the static. It's not a once. I'm sure I wake up over on the wrong side of the column all kinds of times. You know, you have to start dealing. What in the world is going on? Where'd this come from? Okay? But keep talking about it. These are not just puffball concepts, you know. They're not just puff. The way, of course, is what the way the program tells us is service to other people, doing things for other people. But now that can get overboard too, so I don't want to overemphasize that. Start practicing that this is the very best moment that could possibly be. Now, the next time I'm stuck in a traffic jam on Garden Expressway, the gas gauge is reading E for enough, and nothing moves for an hour, I certainly want to be able to say, boy, this is the best possible moment that could possibly be, right? And if I could learn to do that with the jerks in my life, right? And religion, always in religious community, you're always living in a house with the last person in the world you want to live with, right? And all of these magnificent opportunities we have time to grow in the shadow side. There's one problem. I don't want to say that the book is wrong. The book is not wrong. It's divinely inspired. But when we talk about getting rid of character defects, you know, what it really means to me is redeeming them and being able to accept them and work with them. Right? Nothing, again, we can't practice magic. You know, we've been living on the face of this earth. Me, it's my 60th year. Nothing is going to change that drastically. Yes, my attitudes and actions will continue to grow and change. But all of a sudden, you know, the character defects or what I call shadow side, or for me, that's anger. Maybe it's not going to just go poof. Like, I mean, people come to me as a priest and say, Father, I'm never going to get to heaven. I mean, I'll never get there. I got angry again. And I say, well, join the human race. Congratulations, you know. And anger is nothing wrong. There's 11 human emotions in you, and all 11 human emotions must be functioning in order for you to be whole. You can't hate, you can't love. Right? And so, you know, what we expect is that we come into the program and we go to a couple of meetings and we make a couple of deals and then, poof, we're just going to be inhuman. See, I was going to say saints, but you are saints, right? A saint is mean just being the person you're supposed to be and nobody else. But what we want to do is dehumanize ourselves, right? And again, in my context, that's not how we were created, saved, or why humanity was put here, or whatever, right? God created us like this, right? And sometimes we all grew up in the old dichotomy of spirit and material, and that material is intrinsically evil. That is craziness. And that the world is evil, that is insane, right? The world's a very, very beautiful place, and I think, you know, we can learn so much from Aboriginal spirituality and Mother Earth, and our relationship to Mother Earth, and to, you know, brother animal, sister flower, and the sacredness of things created, the sacredness of spirit in the tree, the sacredness of the winds, and all kinds of things like that. But I don't want to, you know, go into all of that, but it is a presence. It is being a present to the world. Like every time I spit on the ground, I'm spitting upon myself, right? And I know Anglo-Saxon Irish Catholic brought up in Montreal was not brought up with those type of concepts, right? The earth is given us to dominate, to squeeze, and to get whatever the heck we can out of it, to make better furniture, no matter how many trees we have to cut down, and on and on and on and on. And now we have to start looking at what we call global spirituality, and at least the great spiritual hopes for our time is, one of them is what's going on right now, the thirst people have for spiritual growth, and that's what you're expecting and experiencing today, the development of consciousness, you know, and the third one is the green movement, which the young people are pretty hep on, much more than we are, you know, rainforests and smoking and all that type of stuff, right? And that really gives us hope. The amount of energies that are spent in those three areas, you know, is really, really encouraging to what we can see going on. And a lot of young people are not just caught up in what means success or what were the marks of success before and 30 years ago or whatever. Any other questions? All right. Again, when we get to the fourth step, whichever way you're going to get to reach the freedom, the happiness, the peace, and the serenity, as it is demonstrated in actions in relationship to other people, a journey in relationship to other people, no matter what the color of their skin, their creed, their belief, their denominationalism, or anything. And we get out of the competitiveness, you know. Our society is very, very competitive, and we compete at all kinds of levels, and I'm saying that's a power. You know, that's another addiction to power. You know, there's three things in life. Like, if I was to say, what makes you tick? You go, Father, I don't know, just me. I just do things that way, right? I just said, that's me. I'm going to go to the baloney, right? We all have a principle of operation for whatever reason, right? And that's the basic line. Okay, so the principle can either be pleasure, the principle can be power, or the principle can be the avoidance of responsibility. If the principle is pleasure, it's very easy. Will I do this, or will I not do this? I ask myself, will I do this? Will it bring me pleasure? No, then I won't do it. Will it bring me pleasure? Yes, I'll do it. Simple, right? No big deal. And that gets back into, I'm drawing this way back out of scriptures to tell you the truth, but I'll bring it up into modern psychology, and that's Sigmund Freud. And the thing which drives every man and woman is the pursuit of pleasure. And so they just have to ask themselves, is this going to be pleasurable? Sure. Yep, we'll do it. And he says that is what makes every human being tick. Adler comes along, and that's his disciple, and says, Freud, you're all wrong. That's not what makes human beings tick. What makes human beings tick is the second one, which is the pursuit of power. So he says, every one of us has such a deep hole in our tummy of inferiority complex that what we are compulsively driven to do is exert our power over other people. Manipulation of other people. Being able to impose our will on other people. Now, we can do that by being general bull moose, by being boss, by being autocratic, by being little Hitler. Or we can do that by being baby. We can play baby. I mean, baby's in the house, baby's sleeping. Who gets all the attention in the house? Baby. We can do that by being Sally Seductress. We can do it all kinds of ways, right? But what we're really doing is getting other people to do, you know, what we want them to do. Right? And we can use all kinds of things. You know, some of them we're definitely aware of, some of them we're not. All kinds. But again, what we're doing is power. You know? And if you want to look over the world scene and see what that one's all about, it gets pretty drastic because of the competitiveness and inhumanity to man just in the pursuit of power. And then, of course, the abuse of power. You can just have to pick up any newspaper. All right across the board, right? And that all comes, as Adler says, you know, from this feeling of inferiority. And the next one that comes along is B.F. Skinner, Watson, and they say, nope, it's the avoidance of responsibility. You know? He says, what Skinner says is that every one of our human lives is already stamped out on the record. The record already has been printed right. And all that remains to be done is to spin it out. There ain't nothing you can do to change it. And therefore, it's determinism. It doesn't make a darn bit of difference. Right? And what that does is take away the capacity of a person to change, which is the second worst thing you can do to any human being. The first worst thing you can do is to take away their dignity, take away their self-esteem. The second worst thing you can do is to take away their capacity to change. And you start looking at that, wow, we... You know, and just our interrelatedness and, you know, how we treat each other and how people are treated. You'll never amount to a pile of beans and, you know, and away it goes. And so, you know, those are three realities which we have to deal with every day. Now, none of these guys, Freud, Adler, or B.F. Skinner, were 100% true. But neither was any of them 100% wrong. Right? And so that's when we say shadow side, we have to accept those things. That's part of humanity, that's part of our broken human condition. When does that part of that broken human condition get compulsively active so that we start hurting other people? Start acting in a way that is contradictory to our own values. Measurable, documental, contrary to values. That's what I'm talking about. And so that means we have to say, that doesn't exist in me. How lucky I am. That's denial, right? Those things exist in all of us, you know? And where do we say, where does the pursuit of pleasure, you know, lead to something that's going to be contradictory to my life? Where does the pursuit of power, you know, just the ability to make other people do what I want them to do? Now, I might not be General Bull Moose or Hitler, but there's different ways that that can be done, too. You know, setting people up. Where is the avoidance of responsibility? Basic evil is not accepting the responsibility for my actions. Basic evil is blaming other people for what happened to me. And again, it's tragic because we see so many people, you know, who get stopped and right there and cannot move on past the last hurt. And the last hurt could be 5 years ago, 10 years ago. And that's what they're caught up in. And they're missing the trip completely. Life's a journey and they're missing the trip completely. And they get to the end of it and it's not too joyous. As a priest, I've had some fantastic deathbed situations, you know, where people are ready to accept and freely give their last gift. Now, you know, I hope that I'll be there, but I'm not there yet. So I'm not ready to, like that old joke about, is there a golf course in heaven? Yeah, your tee off time's 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. We're not quite ready for that, right? But when you see that happen, that is something that's tremendously moving. I mean, it's tremendously, everything else falls by the wayside. I mean, the U-Haul full of the junk we've collected through life all of a sudden doesn't amount to a pile of beans, much less. Well, this is our last opportunity to do a human act, and it's being done graciously and givingly, looking forward to it. And it's, actually, it's kind of, it's scary because we don't know how it's going to go for us, but I've dealt with people who've had out-of-body experiences, you know, who have died and come back, heart stopped, and their experiences have all been magnificently wonderful, you know? They kind of, like, they're sorry they came back, and I think, I don't know if I'd be doing that right now, let me tell you, right? So when we talk about the shadow side, I'm talking about that side which, you know, we have to get down to share with somebody and get it redeemed, and so that then we're going to be able to appreciate the sacredness in the ground between us. That's another statement, you know, that in relationships there's sacredness in the ground between people. You know, and can we appreciate that sacredness and work at it? Again, it, you know, to love is work. You know, and to love is what love does. You know, it's not a feeling. You know, we can fall upon all of the feelings that go into it, and that's not bad, okay? But to get down to what happens when we fall in love, first of all, you know, all ego boundaries get broken down completely, right? And the other person becomes the most exhilarating, magnificent, wonderful gift that ever walked on the face of this earth, and our whole raison d'etre and cause of being and joy and everything else, and oh my God, we become devils. We do, because what we do is we load up that other person to be the answer to all the needs which we have in life, and no human being is going to do that. In fact, God's not going to do that for you. Right? And we start demanding it. And then as we, for any of you who saw Miss Saigon, you know, I saw it and it was a really flashback for me all the time, because when I was in Detroit, what I was dealing with were those people who came back from Vietnam who got caught up in the drug scene over there, and now they hit Detroit, and I had a whole house full of them, and they're all, you know, at the virulent age of about 23, and of course they all picked a pet up in Saigon, right? And of course the pet didn't, you know, that's why people love pets. Why do we love, I love my St. Bernards, absolutely love them, right? They don't talk back, right? They don't tell me to go blazes. They don't do their own thinking. All they do is sit there and wag their tail at me, right? I don't have one now, but I've had 13 in my time. Anyway, okay, so that's why. You know, people absolutely adore their pets. That's all their pets do. Well, then these guys were picking up their little pets in Saigon, right? And then bringing them over to America, right? And then a year later, guess what? Those pets learned how to talk. All of a sudden, ego boundaries snapped back into position, and they said, I don't like what you're doing. How can my pet not like what I'm doing? Yeah. And so then, with out of love, and then we can start working on the business of what loving is all about. Dealing with the fifth step. Now, you're in a positive frame of mind, right? You've got to remember now, you've reviewed the whole business of your own self-worth, the whole business of acceptance, of trusting. You've learned to trust, and you've learned to trust by not intellectual assent of just dogma and definition, not mental gymnastics, but you've done things in the fellowship, both AA and Al-Anon. You know, you've picked up ashtrays, and you've made coffee, and you've extended yourself, and you've seen people do good things, and you've appreciated it, and that comes by work, not just thinking about it. And you've learned something about trusting at that level. You know, you're a long way from trusting God or institutions that have hurt you and that type of stuff, because you're still going to be working on hurts from the past. And that's okay. We're not asking this to happen overnight. But we got to keep working on that. And we get through the fourth step, fearless fourth step. That means we got to learn humility. That means we got to be able to accept the fact, the cold hard fact, that we're not the only person in the world that has done these things, right? And try to see the nature of what happened or the nature of how these things came into our lives and what really blocked us and drove us back into selfishness, you know? Deliver us from this bond of selfishness. And so what we do then is we do write them down. You know, as they're described in the big book, and what fear is, fear someone, you know, is going to do something that's going to be against my wishes or step on my ego or ruin my little plan, and I get mad, and as little mad, you see the baby jumps up and down, and what happens is, you know, all of those things, because people are stepping on our ego, and okay, we get a little uptight about it. Might retaliate, do, you know, more hurts come out of it, and that type of thing. But get through the whole list. Then you look at some of what I continually want to do with people is continue to look at some of the good things. You know, what are the good things? Like I say, if I were to give you a pencil and paper, write down 10 beautiful things about yourself. Some people would be here at midnight, and I think that's tragic. How then do we take the shadow side or the dislike behaviors and turn them into like behaviors? And that's the lifetime goal. What I'm also saying is that, you know, we pray to have these character defects removed. What I'm saying is to really look at them and say, how do I deal with them? I don't think there's going to be any magic. You know, we're always going to be the same person. But are we going to allow, you know, the denial or the to continue to hurt other people and then continue to do things in life that are contrary to what our own values are? So we've written it down. Then we find a sponsor. Well, in fact, we should have a sponsor from the very beginning. And the sponsor's role is not to tell you exactly how to do everything, you know, but to be guiding you through, you know, the book, and I'm just saying, you know, the whole book, but especially between page 58 and 103. You write all this down, and then when you are in the right frame of mind, right, by doing the first four steps, and you feel good about that, and you feel good about yourself, and you know, not in any euphoric way, but you know you've done the work. And what joy is and happiness is the completion of something that's meaningful and purposeful, the continual succession of completing different levels of growth and of stretching. And you find the person that you can trust, who's had some experience, and who has the time, and who is willing to do it, and then you sit with them. And what I usually do is I ask to have it first, and then I read it myself, and then I give it to the person at a later date, and then they read it to me, and I'm able to make some type of comment. But the important thing is, you are sitting with another creature, another human being, just like yourself, eyeball to eyeball, saying This is me. Here are the good, here are the shadow side or the negative side, or this is what the alcohol brought into my life, and this is how I demonstrated intolerance, and this is how jealousy came in, and this is how anger got into it, and this did destructive things, and this is how envy got in, and this is how lust got in, and you know, all of those things are real. We've all got them, right? And this is how anger got there, and okay, now we're not denying it. Fine. And we go through them all, right? Eyeball to eyeball. Not saying, well, I did this because somebody else made me do. No. Right? It's ownership. Ownership of what we've done. And there's a pretty well, 44 symptoms are all the same, right? And then to deal with the what we call like behaviors, and then in time to work over, you know, how do we change like behaviors or dislike behaviors into like behaviors? The main thing is, though, when that is going on, and the other person accepts that, and they will, absolutely, because they're not, you know, their tummy's not going to burst open and fall out in the middle of the floor, and they're not going to die, they're not going to have a heart attack, and we all think that, eh? You know, people keep saying to me, oh, Father, better bring lunch and a dinner, and Lord, you know, and close the blinds, and come on, you know, get a grip. To find out the person, you know, is able to accept that, you know, listen to it, make some appropriate comments. Then, once you've done that, you will, for the first time in your life, accept creaturehood. Now, I don't care if you've gone through all of the stuff that I went through in pontifical institutes and study from Noddle Doomsday and go to courses every night of the week and on, that's all mental gymnastics. What I'm talking about is life, and that's guts, and that's feeling. And you accept creaturehood because you're with another creature. And implicitly in accepting creaturehood, you, for the first time, accept a creator other than you. And then you're beginning to know what forgiveness is about. And until you do that, you just keep working away at trying to become more perfect and changing and more perfect, and I'll get it, and I'm going to get God or higher power before he gets me, and I'm going to go to 19 AA meetings a week, and I'll get this, and it's exhausting, you know? And it's burnout, and we see that happening, and people say, well, I tried it for 3 years, and it didn't work for me, so I quit. The big secret of it is, the big gift of it is, that in accepting that, you accept the creator other than yourself, and then you accept forgiveness, and then it changes. You no longer hear the person say, I'm a sewer, I'm a sewer. I'm just getting through another day. Oh, and when you ask them to do something, sure, I'll do it. Not all tied up about what's the outcome going to be. Is it going to be successful? Is it going to be the best AA talk that they've ever heard in their life? You know, that's why we all use telephones. We won't write letters, because we want to write the letter. It's got to be the most perfect letter that's ever been written in the whole world, right? And so it's much easier to pick up the telephone, you know, and do all that type of stuff. And what we're saying here is, you know, that we're able to accept, you know, ourselves. Then, you know, the joy comes in. Just the joy of being. Not of having. You know, and so much of what we judge ourselves in life is having. What do I have? Oh, and you know, we talk about power, we talk about money, and everything we have in one way or other we become a slave to. But that's not what we're into anymore. We're just into being. You know, and becoming. And now you're into like spiritual values of dignity and of self-worth and of self-respect. And we're not all concerned about what other people are thinking or, oh my God, and all of this type of stuff. We know what our relationship is and how our relationship with our Creator, our relationship with our higher power, and how do we live out that relationship and dignity in relationship to other people. So it's no longer walking into AA meetings and Al-Anon meetings and saying the same drunkalog story that I said in 1964, you know, which is a cop-out. And it's no longer if someone says, well, I drank a fifth, sure enough, someone's going to say, I drank two-fifths, you know. Sure enough, I say three-fifths, someone's going to say four-fifths. There's always somebody going to play, can you top this game, right? And it can go on and on and on and on. That's not what we're in the group for, to share with people how we get well. And then, with the terrific release of that coming, you know, doubt, the real metanoia, the real conversion, the real aggressive, hostile, anxious, worryful, all those things that we have to give up start to dissolve away, and then the person's tone, the tonality is quite different, right? Quite different. It's very observable. A person will be the last one that's able to see it in themselves, but those people around him who will live close with him are definitely able to evidence that. And they see it evidence it for sure. For sure. Now all of the other types of information you get about don't take the fourth step till you're sober 23 years and don't take the fifth till an hour before you die and I mean we're robbing ourselves, you know? One basic rule I have when people are talking to me, and of course a lot of people love to give advice, and I'm accepted, I ask them one thing. You're talking about a step? Yep. Have you taken this step yourself? Well, what step are we talking about? We're talking about the fourth step. Have you written down the fourth step as prescribed? No, not yet. I'm out of the room. Sometimes it won't be quite that emphatic, but I will. And if I ask them, if a person starts coming to me about all the pros and cons about taking the fifth, I say, well, have you taken the fifth step yet? I say, no. Well, I give them, I said, are you interested? Well, no, but here are the reasons. And the same with any of them, you know? The same with any. If they're stuck on the first step as just being an admitting without taking a decision to do something about it, they're going to end up in a state of life where they cannot make a free decision. At least we can make them aware of that. But that's it. I'm certainly not going to listen because what is the bane of my life, what is you know, recovery from alcoholism in AA. And we get a lot of people, and I'm not knocking it. You know, if a person comes to AA meetings and tells me, look, I stay sober the best I can by standing in the corner and spitting nickels, that's great. Right? Because that's their business. Now, if they're coming to me as a counselor for advice and all of that, then it's quite different. But I certainly don't go to AA to instruct other people what to do. Never. Right? That's not my role there. No, my role there is to learn, to be humble. There's eight people at the AA table. Each one of those eight people has a life-giving message for me. Now, can I stay attuned so I can accept that? Or do we start judging and blocking and this reason and that reason and the other reason? How? And that's really the grace when we start saying to stay alive, to be able to accept the gifts of people. Even the jerks in my life, right? They are your best friends in the spiritual life. They're the ones that have a real message for me, right? And they might be different. It doesn't mean I'm going to want to go sailing with them forever or skiing or whatever or some of the other things I do for the fun of it that are very life-giving. But you still cannot discard what they say as being utter nonsense and judging. All right, any questions on that? There should hopefully be some because we're getting down to what really is, you know, really is making yourself vulnerable, you know, and becoming transparent. And that's what intimacy is. Intimacy is the breaking down of walls, right? The breaking out of the shell of aloneness, the making ourselves transparent and becoming, you know, vulnerable and sharing of feelings. The negative ones as well as the positive ones. Right. And that, those are actually the greatest gifts you can give to anybody. Much greater than Mercedes, Benz, Ferraris, and fur coats or diamonds. You know, those are all ways in which we manipulate people or get power over them or put them in situations where they owe us something, a tab, and they might start collecting the tab later on in different ways. So what we're talking about, you know, is real human, you know, good stuff. And that's what you're made of. And I keep saying that because it gets hidden and all of the wholeness or the integrity or the authenticity or the, what we call sacredness of people gets hidden too. Questions? Yeah. No, we're talking about ourselves. We can't hate anybody. If I get mad, there's only one person in the world I have a right to get mad to. Me. We don't have the right to hate anybody. But I can get mad at some of the things, the crazy things I've done. I've done them, right? Not too proud, but I mean, unless I get mad at them, I'm not going to change. Understand her dilemma. Okay, then see if I repeat it the proper way. Young lady is encouraged to go to step meetings all the time, but gets discouraged because when she goes to step meetings, there are people who don't know what they're talking about. Is that it in a nutshell? Yeah, okay. That's still valid for the people who are only sober a very short period of time to tell them what that step means to them at that particular time. It's not valid for me, no matter how much I know or how long I'm sober, to tell anybody else how to do it. All I can say is this is what it means for me today. Now, the best way to do it, though, is to know I'm going to a step meeting, you know, and I know what step it's going to be tonight, to say, okay, to sit down and say, what does that step mean for me today? And to prepare. You know, how am I going to share with people the fruits of what this step has meant in my life? Today. Not way back when and skate all over the place, right? Well, I agree with you on that one, you know. You say, take it and come back. But we're there, again, you know, to accept the other people. And I mean, it doesn't mean that because we are given opportunities to learn these things or to do them, that makes us anyway more superior than others. But what I am talking about is life and death. You know, then it is life and death. One more than you. Yep.
mentioned earlier a thing that caught my attention. You said that the definition of a being ourselves.
Yep.
That seems to be another concept altogether when it talks about we are not saints. We have to try to grow on spiritual life. What would that mean in that case of you?
What's a saint?
How does that line go along with what you're saying? We are not saints. Mm-hmm.
Wherever there's sin, grace abounds more greatly. Right? Saints are not, you know, being perfect. You know, some of the greatest sinners turned out to be the greatest saints when they were able to accept their shadow side and grow with that and get that redeemed and know where the grace is coming from. If you've ever had to live with a saint, it's painful. I also know the context that this came out of, right? Okay, you know, let's get back to the Oxford movement, 1930s, 20s, and that type of thing. Okay, so we got to put things in their historicity. I know exactly what that means, that we're not supposed to, you know, be, you know, dehumanize ourselves in the order of going to get God before he gets me and come out in what a picture of a saint was in those times, you know, with head this way. No, that's not it. But God created you ever since the beginning of time, King City. Do you realize that? Do you realize that more than 15 billion years ago that he knew you better than you know you now? That 15 billion years ago, he formed you in the depths of the earth. And some couple of years ago knitted you together in your mother's womb and called you into being and holds you in the palm of his hand. Today. Not just a short, how old are you, 35? See, we all think that we've just been around 30, hey, ever since the beginning of time, that's 15 billion years. Can anybody imagine what 15 billion years, the Big Bang Theory? Can you even remember what 15 billion years looks like? I can't go back more than 2,000. I really can't. You know, when you start looking at these scientists and what happened and the earth moved and this happened, and oh my God, how in the world did they ever figure this stuff out? You know? And then, wow, I went to that, what do you call it, planetarium there, and laid and looking. And, well, this is what happened 15 billion years ago. There was one energy, you know, in 1/82nd of a second, you know, went poof. And that's how we started. And it's still moving. It is still moving. The earth is still moving. Things are happening. And at least young people are becoming aware of that. But that's awesome. You know, I mean, you're not just in this room for nothing. And every one of you, the same thing. And that's what, when I get down to the business of, you know, becoming in touch with that. You know, that far puts you on a different plane than worrying about what I just read in the newspaper, right? You know, humanity is called for a much greater vocation or calling, right? And what are we called for? To learn to love one another. And we're doing a horrible job at that. God, I just saw the movie Schindler's List. Oh. And then the other book which came out was which is the retaliation of the Poles towards the Jews. I mean, and then the Jews retaliating to the Poles. I mean, man's inhumanity to man. And what do you do? Pick up any paper. Oh. But it still is getting to be a better place, and there still has reason behind all of that. Not that God wills it, not that any higher power wills it, not that any creator wills it. Any more on the fifth step? Yes.
Clarify.
Yeah, in the olden days, sponsorship was come in the room, take the book, into the back room, sit down, we're going to read. Right? And that's what it was. And the sponsor was responsible, you know, in that capacity in life, to make sure you got through and learned. It wasn't what happens today, which is not bad because of all of the treatment centers and all kinds of things. Well, I don't want to go into that one too much. A lot of people come into AA, you know, and some of them are very, very good. But also remember now, alcoholism is an industry. And what does an industry do? Why? Money. Okay? I'm not knocking it, but I'm just saying that we got to open our eyes, you know, and I'm not saying it's bad, and I'm certainly not saying that, oh, if you don't, if you come in and through a treatment program, there's no hope that you should lie on the floor and watch the pink polka dotted alligators and turkeys with straw hats. No, 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 no. I'm not saying that, right? But what sponsorship is, you know, do we really realize the sacredness of the other person to allow that other person to grow toward freedom and to continue to study to make sure that we're not just imposing our power or our will or do things the way I tell you to do it? Well, I think, you know, you certainly have your intelligence and you certainly have your own life story, which is unique to you. And you can question. Huh? I mean, some demands I've heard are certainly unreasonable demands. No, I mean, you certainly question them. But what I'm saying is that the sponsor is the person who should be guiding you, making sure that those things that you are vulnerable enough to or transparent enough so that when you're down in the dump, he's going to be able to notice that, or you're at least going to be able to share that with him. You know, to share negative feelings is not bad. You know, if I'm feeling rotten, it's kind of a lie and denial around saying everything's so wonderful. Isn't it nice? How neat. You know? So that's what I would see. And you know, and also I think that a person should have one sponsor. And if they don't like that sponsor, to be able to sit down and talk about it and then change sponsors for valid reasons. But not to have six sponsors. Huh? And going to the different ones for different reasons all the time. Does that answer it? No, I don't think it's his own experience, because his own experience might be 30 years separated from the experience that the person's going through now. But it is the step. It is the, no. See, my experience, if I'm talking to a 24-year-old today, is, whew, forget it. It's 28 years old. Huh? Now I can empathize with him and put myself in his shoes and listen, right? And see what I can learn. But what I'm talking about is, how do we activate the steps in him today? What is the best way to do that? It's not going to say, well, you better go down to a nut house like me and get locked up for 57 weeks and weave baskets and make wallets and make playing porno putty, and unless you do that, you ain't got the program, right? That's what I did. If I had to, it would let me out, right? That's not the way. But the reality of the steps, the fellowship, yeah, and searching around till he finds a home being that place which is comfortable enough where the people take away the strangeness he feels of being who he is. Okay? Others? Yes?
Always even if you don't understand the steps of Lindy yet, like you said, you have to get the message from him. That's the strength you're in the crowd. But to the message as well, even though they don't have the full awareness.
I don't think that was for real. The question was, the way I heard yours was about like a little bit of defiance in the fact that we're going to teach somebody else what a step's about when we really haven't done it ourselves and kind of, you know, impose our will on them. That's the way I heard that one, you know, unless you do it this way and I'm going to tell you about this step and this is what, no. And I think that's where that was coming from. What you have just said, though, is vitally important because that's where life comes from. New life in AA comes in by the person most unlikely for us to accept that they're bringing us anything but problems. Or, right? He's a dirty, smelly, unclean, unwashed, you know, drunk. And he comes in, and that's what brings us life. And if that was to stop, we'd wither up and die. Right? Now, we can get pretty uppity, you know, and say, well, don't you think we should clean him up a little bit? and doesn't smell nice, and, you know, hey, just until we kiss the leper, we ain't going to see the beauty. And that's okay. Let's go on to step six. A character defect. Okay? What is it? Okay, all of us were born, as I hope I've tried to make you realize that, as special persons, unique persons, human beings, with all of that, what all of that conjures up to mean. You know? Saints or angels or whatever? No, yeah. Saints, yeah. Angels, no. Okay? If God wanted us to be angels, we'd be someplace else. Heck, helping him in the directorship of the universe. But we get down to all of what this means, and we now are at character defects, and people have a horrible time trying to figure out what these are. Now, when we look at step six, which starts talk, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And what it talks about is when we start demanding more of life, when we start demanding more out of life than is our due, when we allow, you know, our anger, our lust, our jealousy, our intolerance, our ba-da-da-da-da, whatever, you know, all of those things, to start becoming selfish. That I'm in it for me, to heck with everybody else. Right? That's when these God-given drives, which are good, and which are sacred, get turned into character defects. Right? When we say we pray to God to remove them, what we're talking about is moving them from being on the shadow side into the redeemed side. Right? I don't feel myself that, poof, they're going to go away forever. Again, would be, Father, I got mad. I'll never go to heaven. God, congratulations, join the human race, right? Because, and that's important. But the big problem is not to recognize them. To pretend that they are not there. To pretend that I'm not caught up in being human. To pretend that I'm above all of this. And to start living compulsively and over-defining a character or over-defining a specific aspect of my personality. Your gift is what's going to end up to destroy you. And when we do that, Again, I give me enough time and I can absolutely find out compulsive, or what we call, you know, a compulsive behavior on the other side. And when we become overbearing with it in a deterministic way, highly judgmental of other people, perfectionistic as heck, you know, not going to do this because I might risk making a mistake, not going to do that, and so we sit on our fannies and miss all kinds of opportunities to grow. Now, all of us have pride, and we should have pride. And for a person who's in this room who has one day of sobriety today, should be proud of that accomplishment. And being able to, in humility, attribute the source of that gift to the right place. Right? The pride that is damaging is when we say, I am better than others. Yeah? So all of us have all of these things. You know, we don't want to be so, you know, conceited and boastful about ourselves, you know, that we go around as braggarts all the time. You know, we don't want to be so angry that you know, and carried to its utter limit, we physically, or any way we can, take revenge out on people, revengeful. You know? Those are character defects. You know, the good given drives in us that are created in us for to be fully human and to be fully alive and to be enthusiastic about life, but because of our own blindness, right? And because of our own denial, if you wish, you know, start getting functioned or exercising in an avenue which, you know, will cause conflict between our behavior and our values. Now, when we take the sixth step, this is the first step which you can practice not sitting down in your office or your lounge or your bedroom or your place where you're doing all your this work. This is the first step that calls you to get off your fanny. Right? Everything else I've talked about since 9 o'clock this morning, you can do sitting down. Right? And now the time has come to say, okay, we've accumulated all this material. We've learned something about trust, hopefully. Right? We've learned something about cleaning house, hopefully. And now we got to say, what are we going to do with it? No, we just can't encapsulate it all and just keep it inside our head and say, oh boy, this is neat. Now I'm cool. Because it doesn't stay. In the spiritual life, unless you share the spiritual life, the gifts which you've received, you lose them. And so in this, we have to start looking at the things which were in our fourth step, the things which we talked in our fifth step, and discuss them with somebody and humbly listen to what their suggestions might be to try. And now we get to the sixth step and say, okay, move the legs. Now's the time. What is all of this work, and it's work, no such thing as a free lunch, you know, going to bring about in my life? Am I just going to come here and spend the day here and say, yeah, well, he said some things okay and some things I didn't say okay and kind of screwy and, you know, and say, oh, well, I'll wait till next year. It might be a better speaker, right? That's not what I'm here for, right? And I'm not here to cure, fix, or whatever. You know, and it's not Father Quinn that's doing it, really. So, what it is what do we do with this stuff? Right? And that's the call. That's the responsibility, which means capacity to say yes to life. Respondere, Latin word. So how do we respond? And that's how we respond, is by putting it into action and by starting to grow. Now we've got a good picture. We've got motivation. By this time we got fellowship behind us. We got groups. We got sponsor. We got this. We got this material. And we want to become freer, happier, more peace, more serenity. And so we have to start practicing it. And so we look at those things, which are the best ones I got. For step six is the book 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. Right? We start looking at those areas, you know, which were brought up in our fifth step, and say, okay, now how do we translate them over here, you know, to start redeeming them. Right? So that we're able to take what was a fault at one time and turn it into something that's going to give us the opportunity to grow. To give life more meaning. Right? And so we go through that in the sixth step. But it's our sixth step. It's not the sixth step of somebody else. I've been caught up where people are taking, you know, and we're doing it on another on another person, on another institution. So that's not what this program's about. You know, it's our spiritual growth. And by spiritual growth, we mean, you know, wholeness, wholesomeness. So go quickly for a couple of minutes. Thank you, Ron. To step seven. What means teachableness? Very, very simply. Teachableness. No? And not just a word. You know? What are those times in my life today when I will, intentionality is the right word, means make the specific intention, you know, to be taught. That means to accept somebody, to take the time to listen, right? To take the time to learn something which I don't know from somebody else. That means I might figure I'm superior to them. I mean, what should I learn from the guys that are living in Tent City? Right? And if I maintain that attitude, I'm not going to ever learn anything. But until I go there and sit and listen. Okay? And you just start experiencing some of that. I'm just saying there's all kinds of opportunities in our life. Okay, how do we become humble? You don't become humble. And again, the four words which I used in the first step, right? Ego deflation, surrender, or hitting bottom, producing a surrender, and then the practice of humility. Those things have to continue. Now, and certainly one of the demonstrations of that is the regular attendance at meetings. All right? Now, when I'm talking about it, doesn't always have to be a world-shattering, bone-crushing, a big event. But we know that we're attached to a group, we go to that group. Right? That we always want to go to that group on that particular night? No! You know, it's medicine. We know tons of people who have to take all different types of medicine so, you know, they can stay healthy. And, you know, the business of wanting and not wanting is a fringe benefit. The reality is, you know, the must. You know, I can say I don't want to drink. I can truthfully say I don't want to drink. That is a fringe benefit, right? But I can also guarantee with you, with my long, you know, experience, that if I, after 28 years, was to stop going to meetings for an extended period of time, I would definitely be in a situation where I would be saying, well, now, things really weren't that bad. Don't have the same nutty pastor as I had in Ottawa. Oh, yeah. No. Man, I got this terrible cold, and certainly one little one won't hurt me. That would definitely happen. Because that's the anatomy of the brain. It's not maliciousness. It's not bad. But I just know how the brain works. The anatomy of the brain, what's in the hypothalamus, I've already told you once how glorious it was sitting in the Kent Tavern with Kenny Reardon and Bill Durden, and he was the goaltender before Jerry McNeil, if any of you can remember that far back, and all of these, you know, magnificent. That's what's up here. No? Not the nut house. That's too long gone. The farther we are away from the last unpleasant incident with what alcohol caused in our life, the less we are aware that alcohol causes the problem at all. And that's why you see after 30 years people kind of forgetting and then saying, oh, well, bingo. And that's a very sad thing. But also, for the people who can stay humble enough And that means to continue to go to meetings, you know, to take the time to be with people, to pick up the ashtrays, to give the talks, to make the coffee, to shovel the snow, to do all that type of stuff. That's what makes the right things. You know, we are such Walter Mitties. We think that everything just happens by wishing, right? God, we wish things could happen. And I raised a big, well, not a big sail, it was 40 feet, you know? And we keep saying, I wish I was over there where the wind is, right? Eh? Well, I can wish from that on doomsday, you know? But unless the work gets into it to get over there, you know, and it's work, nothing's going to happen. And so it's the same thing in life. And if I wish quality sobriety, and if I wish joy, and if I wish enthusiasm, and if I wish happiness, and if I wish all these things, there's nobody that's responsible for that other than Von Quinn. Huh? Up to me. I'm the forger of my own destiny. Or I could start blaming. I mean, Lordy be. I mean, I see more idiotic things in a day than tons of people. Like, no, it's terrible. What's the vision? I started off by saying, what's the vision? Now, humility means I will allow myself to be taught. That means I can pick out any person and be able to learn something from them. Right? Now, hopefully, we got the right intention to be looking in the right place. Right? Doesn't mean that you have your power of choice that you have to use. Augmentino, very good. Count your blessings. Always go the extra mile. If you're only doing in life what's expected of you or what you are being paid for, you are a loser. Proclaim your rarity, that is, know your gifts, right? Always use your power of choice wisely. Do everything with love. But there's tons of places you could go and learn all kinds of stuff that wouldn't exactly be helpful, you know, to growing. We try that too, and you know, that's okay. Well, we make mistakes. Again, the only mistake you make is not to try. And when you have, you know, to sit down with a group of people and say, what do you think? You are going to get the right answer. No? A judgment of 5 or 6, 7 people in a group is always better than your own. Always. So if you're thinking of doing something, the real humility then is not adopting His Majesty the baby, saying, I'm going to go off and do it my way, and it's my way or the highway, and I'm right. But sit down with a group of people who know you and say, what do you think? And then have the humility to abide by what they decide. Then you'll get the truth. Doesn't mean it's always going to be what you want, but at that time, it's going to be definitely what you need. And that's it till 6:45, Ron? 6:45.